Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Our Lord said to them, "Go ye into the whole world and preach the gospel to every living creature."
Ferreira is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step into high danger.
That's an excerpt from the movie Silence, a Martin Scorsese film that has just premiered, I believe, in some major cities. And it tells the story, an overtly religious story, a Christian one, in fact, of missionaries to Japan. We're going to be looking at faith and film and television in all that entertainment of 2016 with Pastor Ted Giese here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. We're live this Friday afternoon, December the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Pastor Ted Giese on faith in film and television in 2016, we'll talk Daniel the prophet and the three young men remembered on the 17th of December. Dr. Paul Elliott, assistant professor of theology at Concordia University, Irvine, California, will be our guest. Pastor Chris Roseborough joins us for our weekly feature, This Week in Pop American Christianity. We are going to talk about the importance of where you get your theology. Where you get your theology is very important. The source of theology is very, very important. It's either going to be the pure, unsullied source, or it's going to be something else. That's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Roseborough. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Now, you can vote in advance for the soundbite this week. You can go and listen to all four of them and vote for the one you like. Just give us a call when the time comes, 1-877-623-6943, or vote in advance by sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or we've left space in our Facebook fan page for you to vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about faith in film and television during the year of 2016, Pastor Ted Giese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Have you noticed any trends or a trend when it comes to faith in film and television over the last year?
Well, I've kind of been noticing some things. There seems to be a more often than not, the faith of characters is being perhaps a little more respected in terms of portraying them, in some cases, as sincere, real people of faith. So I kind of first noticed it in that film, Hail Caesar, in which Josh Brolin plays the main character working for a studio in the 1950s kind of heyday of Hollywood. And he's a Roman Catholic, but they didn't, the Coen brothers in that film from back in February didn't belittle his faith or downplay it at all. It was kind of like the real, I guess in a way, a moral center to the film. So this I thought was very interesting. And then again, some other films, like The Witch, maybe we can talk more about that film. That's a film that took the supernatural more seriously and didn't, do the whole nod and wink at the audience saying, well, yeah, but this isn't really a real thing. They wanted you to believe that it was real. There's a certain sincerity to that. And there's a kind of a movement that I'm looking at now a little more carefully called the New Sincerity Movement, which I think has some underpinnings that we're seeing now kind of coming out in films and television.
Let's talk about the film that you mentioned just a moment ago, The Witch. just real quick, kind of refresher as to what the film is and what was notable to you in its treatment of faith.
Well, The Witch is set in New England, and it's kind of got the little heading at the beginning, like a New England fairy tale, kind of folktale kind of thing. But the thing about it was is that it was so grounded in reality. So the way that they shot it, all of the details in it, the clothing, the costume, the setting, all of that kind of thing, even the style of speech, the dialogue, everything about it. So with that film, it essentially follows this family, and what happens is the family are part of a Puritan community. They have a disagreement, the father does, with the community about a matter of doctrine, and he's kind of given the choice, you know, either get right with the community or get going, and he picks get going. So they go out to a place about a day's horse ride away from the community on the edge of a forest. They try to strike out and build a farm for themselves there, and in the midst of that, the youngest child, an infant, is whisked away. And the family tells itself that it was wolves, but it turns out that it was a witch. And then everything starts to unravel in this psychodrama. But the thing is that the witch isn't just part of their imagination. It's not something that they told each other in the dark, etc., etc. It's a real witch. And at no point along the way in the film is the audience given an opportunity to hit the eject button. Like, at no place along the way is it, this isn't really what's going on. They never go there with that.
So it takes, like you said before, it takes both the supernatural. What about the Puritan faith that is the contrast of the foil there? Usually, a Christian might expect that to be kind of overdrawn in stark, very moralistic terms. Does it get that kind of treatment in the film?
Well, they are Puritans, so it does come across that way. In fact, one of the most chilling moments in the movie is, it's a horror film. I'm not recommending everybody run out and see it. But one of the most chilling moments in the movie is this conversation between the father and the son about the baby that's been missing, because the baby went missing and they presume the baby to be dead, and the baby isn't baptized because they're kind of in a community that baptizes people later. And the son isn't baptized either, and he asks the question, what will happen to me if I go missing or I should die and I'm not baptized? And the father gives the Calvinist kind of answer of double predestination. And it's classic Calvinism, and it fits in that Puritan world. And as a Lutheran sitting there, I'm going, da-da-da-da-da, that is the worst possible answer. There's no hope and faith in the midst of that. There's nothing to cling on to. There's no Christ there. And it's, that was the truly frightening moment for me watching the film. So they do an admirable job actually portraying the theology correctly. And there's sincerity in some of the characters, and there's, you know, some of the characters are latching on to the religious aspects in a negative way. But it is a very interesting depiction of that period of time.
One of the things that's been noticed in film and other television kind of pop culture is that religion is being incorporated into the characters' identities, but they aren't kind of two-dimensional religious characters. It's part of their identity, but it is not their only defining feature. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, you know, years ago you might have a character like Ned Flanders. I guess Ned Flanders still exists because the Simpsons are still on TV somehow, but where it's very flat. You know, they're not very complex characters. They're not actually wrestling with real issues or anything. There is a TV show that I started watching, and again, this is not a recommendation. It sounds like we should be doing this in October, but there's a TV show called The Exorcist, which is based on the film The Exorcist, and of course, I've seen the film The Exorcist, so I'm watching this TV show. It has Gina Davis in it. And I was just about to hit the eject button on it, because I don't know, I was four or five episodes in, but for whatever reason, I stuck with it. And the fifth episode, it really, like, gasoline got put in the thing, and it exploded, and it turned out to be a really interesting show at this point. But at any rate, there's the character of this priest, who is a Roman Catholic priest, who's struggling with being a priest. And one of the things he's struggling with is, he's got this old flame from the past, and of course, as a Roman Catholic priest, he's taken a vow of celibacy, and there's this struggle in there. But the way in which it's being depicted is very interesting. At one point, he has a conversation in the car with, or with a lady, about things that happened in this woman's past. And she's talking about how, you know, like, she, her whole life was, she said, in free fall. It was like, she gives the analogy, walking down a flight of stairs and miscounting and then finding yourself in free fall. And as she's telling him this, this priest, all of a sudden his mind is flooded with images of this woman and an indiscretion that he's found himself in. And the idea is that he himself is in free fall at this very moment. And it's this kind of complex picture that they're presenting. And it's a nuanced and it's interesting. So I think that you find more of that. Now, of course, he's the character of a priest, so you'd imagine that it would be there for him. But this is showing up in other programs and television as well.
Talking about faith in films and television during the year of 2016, Pastor Ted Giese is our guest on this Friday afternoon, December the 16th. On the other side, examples of religion in film and various religious themes. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. We'll be talking more about faith in film and television right after this.
Is dressing up to be there too. Just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Are you looking for a last-minute Christmas gift? Reformation Gear has produced a new Martin Luther plush figure featuring the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. ReformationGear.com. The new Martin Luther plush figure, ReformationGear.com.
Memoria Press invites all Issues, etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for December is a Christmas book for children ages 5 through 9. It's titled The Christmas Connection. You can find out more about this new Christmas Arch book at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase The Christmas Connection by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your young children, grandchildren, and godchildren will discover the relationship between Jesus' birth and resurrection in The Christmas Connection. 1-800-325-3040.
I confess I've lived in sin. I deserve all shame and everlasting hellfire. Show me mercy. Show me that light.
Like Philip said, you are wicked.
This wilderness will not consume us.
Witches were part of all my earliest nightmares. The 17th century witch, the Puritan witch, she's a lot more primal and a lot scarier than we ever would have imagined.
Speak none of this to Mother.
It's crucial to have the entire world be as accurate as possible to the 17th century, because we really needed to believe in this world and be super grounded in it so that we could believe in the witch the same way these people did.
You've cursed this family.
The setting is a character. It made it all very real. It's not like a fairy tale witch. She's frightening.
The film needed to be gloomy. The DP has beautifully crafted natural light. In recreating this authentic idea of what 17th century New England would be, we had to make everything because there was no way we could fake it. This was the high bar that we all needed to go to in order to say a witch can be real.
That's a little bit of the filmmakers of that movie, The Witch. We're talking about faith in films and television in 2016. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Ted, why don't you give us some examples, if you would, of religion and film, in particular religious themes, some examples.
Well, I think like one of the things that I'm actually looking really forward to, I could say, another one that I'm looking forward to seeing is a movie called Silence. And Silence is by Martin Scorsese. And it's not in full release at the moment, but it's about Portuguese Jesuit priests in Japan. And it's based on a book from 1966 by this Japanese Christian writer, Endo. He's a Catholic guy. And dealing with 17th century, you know, mission work in Japan, and the struggles with people being forced to apostatize, you know, priests and Christians, and by the government of the day. And I think that this is like a very interesting one. I just finished the audiobook for it. I'm looking forward to it, seeing it in the theater, and then writing a review for it for Issues Etc. and for everybody else to read. But there's another one where a guy like Martin Scorsese, who even made a movie like The Last Temptation of Christ, and who I guess apparently himself at one point was thinking about going into the priesthood and being a Roman Catholic priest, how he's interested in this in terms of a director. And we've seen other examples of this in the past is, you know, guys like Ridley Scott, who made that film Gods and Kings, the Exodus one, where he's struggling with religious ideas and what it all means. And in his particular context, he's struggling because of the recent death of his brother by suicide. And he dedicates it to his brother in the film. So I think you find that, you know, the actual people who are making these films are interested in religious ideas and thoughts. And as a result, it's cropping up in the films that they're making.
Could it be also that they actually are drawing upon, now it may be just childhood experience, but drawing upon personal experience, therefore treating these characters and their faith with a little more sympathy than maybe kind of the crusading filmmakers of the 1990s and 2000s did?
Yeah, and I think this goes back into this this idea of this kind of movement, the new sincerity. Now, it displays itself in culture in a couple different ways. One way is, we hear the term authentic a lot, and you know, we often put this into the camp of people like, or like groups of people like hipsters, let's say. But at the heart of it is this idea that they actually just want to portray something as it is, and to be honest about what the thing is. It's kind of like there's a bit of a vacuum of snark, like the kind of like the postmodern edginess. You know, what is truth, you know, kind of starts to evaporate. So, for instance, when you have, that question of what is truth, if everybody says, well, you have your truth and I have your truth, we've all got truth, et cetera, you know, at some point somebody wants to say, no, you know what, this is it right here. Take it or leave it. This is it. And I think that you're getting a little more of that. Now, it is kind of a cafeteria-style thing because a lot of people are saying it from different points of view, as we would say, but it seems like there's more readiness to grab onto that idea, and I think that, you know, when we talk about the nuns, like you hear statistics about the nuns, well, the nuns, it doesn't mean that they're not thinking things through. It doesn't mean that it's not part of the world that they live in, that there's some thoughts there. They just haven't come to any conclusions, per se, let's say. And some filmmakers are actually wrestling with these ideas and are interested in them and find them complex and fascinating.
Let's talk a little bit about pluralism. There was a recent Vox column that we've been working from here And the author researched there that religion in television and film this year was really about pluralism. That is, these many different truths, many different religious viewpoints. Do you agree or do you disagree?
I think it like I was saying, it comes with the nature of the territory. So, you know, like watching like this TV show, The Exorcist, that's on right now, there are details in there that I can't imagine that the writers aren't Roman Catholics. You know what I mean? Like it's certainly coming from, or there has to be somebody in that writing room who's Roman Catholic, because they wouldn't have those details. And I think that when you have these various different filmmakers making films, they're not part of a monolithic religious culture where they're all in one bag. So if they're going to be true to what they want to get across, it's going to appear, when you step way back and look at the whole year or the last decade, it's going to look like pluralism in terms of a plethora of points along the way. In that article that you had mentioned, it's kind of interesting. This Alyssa Wilkinson points out this little statistical detail about people who pray, and it's just in this article, and it talks about people who pray. So people who prayed in the last week, the number encompassed 65% of the religiously unaffiliated. So like 65% of people who are religiously unaffiliated, the nuns, pray at least once a week. And then within that, she makes a note of that there's this somewhat baffling thing, 10% of atheists pray once a week, which is really interesting. So I think this is why we find television and movies that deal and delve into religious topics, because it is interesting to people. Either they are in a religious life of their own, or they're on the edge of one, or they've abandoned one, or they're fighting against one, or they're struggling with one. Somewhere along the way, they have some contact. So even if they fit into the category of the nuns or even atheists, there's still stuff going on there, and I think that that's interesting. That's probably why this stuff keeps cropping up, apart from it being part of Christian capital. Like, even if it's part of Christian capital in North American Western society, that's one thing. The people making the film still have to pick up that Christian capital and run with it, and I think that that might be part of this other part.
Also, the Vox article notices that there's the theme of doubt, or at least the interplay between faith and doubt. Have you noticed the same thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is interesting to people. And if you have a group of people, you have a society of people trying to figure things out, then doubt is going to be part of that equation. One of the things I mentioned that film Silence by Martin Scorsese, one of the things that's in that is that the title of the film is Silence. And through going through the audiobook, there's a big question of what happened. Like, what if I'm just praying to nothing? What if there is no God? This is a little thought that creeps in, and the Rodriguez, the Portuguese priest, a Jesuit priest, recognizes it as a real dangerous thing, he thinks, when he first thinks this thought in the midst of real persecution in Japan. But then he comes to a different point of view by the end of it, and I'll be interested to see how Martin Scorsese deals with that in the film. But, you know, like this question of, is there a God or isn't there? Is there life after death or isn't there? Is there is religion to be something to turn to or not? ? I think that this is something that kind of comes up over and over again in film and television during this last year, and it's kind of a growing thing. So I'll be interested to see how it plays out in the next year. I mean, there are films that we would classify as, like, or maybe not we would, but other groups would classify it as being Christian, like for the Christian market, things like God's Not Dead 2. And even in that, it's a question of atheism versus Christianity. And as schlocky and as, I don't know, unkind as that film is towards atheists, I think in the real world and in some of these more nuanced and more carefully thought out films and dramas, you find that the question of doubt is really something that people are struggling with, But God is not part of the equation, and faith is not part of the equation. It is part of the struggle.
I was going to ask about that, these genuinely so-called faith-based films, where the issue is blatantly an issue of faith, like God Is Not Dead 1 and 2. Do those, on the whole, just looking at films like that, do those do some damage to, at the very least, the image of Christianity, as opposed to the maybe just a secular film that's going to incorporate it as a part of the story and deal with it honestly without the caricatures?
You know, I kind of think that it does. I think it can be damaging. I've got friends who, you know, would fall into the category of, you know, atheist on a bad day, agnostic on a good day. And they are thinking about stuff. We have really insightful conversations about these things. But a movie like God's Not Dead or God's Not Dead 2, if it's intended to be more than just, I don't know, preaching to the choir or something, but if it's intended to be something that would actually touch an atheist and get them to clearly think about something or to seriously consider something, then they need to make sure that the characters in their film itself, that those are real people, that they're not, you know, mustache-twirling, like, villains, and that they are actually three-dimensional, complex, real-type characters. Because if they're not like that, then an atheist or an agnostic looking at the movie is going to say, I don't see myself there. In fact, I see this offensive, two-dimensional, flat character that isn't actually me, you know. So the thing to remember is, like, what St. Paul says in, or St. Peter, rather, says in 1 Peter, when he talks about, you know, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. But then it doesn't stop there. It continues, St. Peter says, yet do it with gentleness and respect. So, you know, if you're making films or you're, you know, you've got these TV shows or things like that, if you have characters that are struggling with stuff, then they need to actually be three-dimensional characters in order for them to be, you know, engaging to people who they themselves, you know, may be categorized by research, Pew Research polls as nuns. They themselves need to see themselves in a way that's helpful, I suppose. If you want to have a water cooler talk with somebody who fits into that category, and you've both seen some TV show where there's an actual legitimate three-dimensional character in it that is struggling with faith, that might actually be helpful in a conversation. Whereas a flat two-dimensional one in a show that's quote-unquote Christian might actually be a stumbling block and problem.
So as you look at 2016 television and film, do you think it accurately reflected the changing religious landscape?
Strangely enough, I think it is. And the thing about these is that you got to remember that they're usually like 11 months out from when they get released. Like, they're people who've been working on it for a year or maybe even 2 years prior to them being released. So they're always kind of a little behind. Like, you can't really look at film and television as trend setting exactly, because it takes time to put them together. But I think that the changing landscape, we're starting to see it showing up more in films. And this is in television. It's not a bad thing. I think it's an interesting reflection, because one of the things that's kind of in the mix of it is there's a softening of the vitriol in a lot of cases. You don't get as many characters as you might have had in the past, which were these two-dimensional and often painted as evil individuals. Now, I mean, we point out things here and there where it's like peculiar and strange, and yeah, you get this character who's very bad and somehow is portrayed to be a Christian, or, you know, quote-unquote a Christian. But I think overall, you know, you see the more complex characters. And this is, and not just in dramas, but also in subgenre and genre films, so things like sci-fi films and fantasy films, you know, these religious questions are still cropping up in these other areas too, so not just the historical dramas. So this is kind of interesting. I think it's an interesting place to be, and I'm curious to see where things are going to continue on.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And he'll be back with us next week to review the Star Wars movie Rogue One. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A great stocking stuffer for the kids, the grandkids, or the godchildren this Christmas is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Christmas Connection, an arch book from Concordia Publishing House, making the connection between Christ's birth, which we are celebrating this Christmas, of course, and his death and resurrection for a world of sinners. You can find out more right there at our website about the Christmas Connection, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and order this arch book. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. On the other side of the break, we're going to be talking about Daniel the prophet, that Old Testament prophet Daniel, and the three young men, and the book of Daniel with Dr. Paul Elliott of Concordia University, Irvine, California.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The CLCC.org.
Please help us finish in the black financially for the ninth consecutive year by making a year-end tax-deductible gift. With 3 weeks left, we're $54,000 short of expenses. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of 2016.
No gimmicks, no shticks, just straightforward preaching and teaching in accord with Scripture and the Lutheran confessions. By the book liturgy, right from the hymnal. No glitz, just Christ crucified for sinners like us. We're Grace Lutheran Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Come receive God's gifts with us. Find out more about us at gracelutheranracine, that's all one word, .net. And like you, we're proud supporters of Issues Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.